Good morning, brothers and sisters. So far, we've considered the book of Job, we've considered that it's inspired, we considered Job as a man, saw his background. We saw how that the language and the structure can sometimes detract from the main lessons of the book. We saw how that Job was definitely a prophet, that he had been inspired, that he had a special relationship with God where he tabernacled with him in his tent. And we started to watch as the three friends tried to comfort and to mourn with Job. And then yesterday we looked at Job in the aspect of priestly activities, of the kind of things that the law would later say a priest would do. And we saw how that Job did some of that in his life, and we'll see even more today. And then we ended by slipping in a reference to the fact that Job had been stripped of his diadem, his royal crown. What I want to do is, I do want to go through all the speeches, and I do want to show how it builds up to a crescendo, but I'm going to do it in a very brief way, as you would probably hope, really, in the time allowed. And also I'm going to try and do it with slides that actually people can see, and I apologise for the detail. My excuse is the screen's not big enough, sorry. Let's just consider for a minute, though, what a king would be. And this is a king, as far as Israel were concerned, and as far as God is concerned. They would be a vicegerent of Yahweh. Now, that isn't a misspelling. That is a word applied, it's an old word, applied to somebody who rules on God's behalf. Totally. And therefore, it only relates to one king. In 2 Samuel, in Psalm 2, and in Psalm 89, the king is referred to as God's son. But the king is only God's son in those situations where he is just and holy. The king would be anointed, or messiahed, as the word means. It's to be messiahed to show that this was now to the man to become king, or as we know it was also used to determine a man who would become priest. 1 Kings 22 and 2 Chronicles 18 show special robes that the king would wear, and there is a word for those robes, those kingly robes. And in 2 Samuel 1, 12, 2 Kings 11 and Psalm 21, we see that there were special things associated with the king called his insignia, and that was a crown made of pure gold or a diadem made of pure gold. And that's the word that is used as of the crown of Solomon and is used of the crown that Job said he had been stripped of. So was Job a king? Well, clearly he wasn't a king of Israel, because Israel didn't exist. But the opening of the book tells us that he was the greatest of all the men of the East. So if there were kings there, they weren't greater than him. So he is the almost king of kings, the greatest of the men of the East. He is the top one in them all. Job 19 tells us that he wore and had a royal diadem. We're going to go through Job 29 in a few moments and see that there is mention there of the power that he had as king, of the robes that he wore and of his scepter, and those references all link back to kingly things. And sometimes Job speaks of them literally, sometimes he speaks of them figuratively. So I'm going to suggest that Job was the king of us, and that's important for tomorrow. So, a recap, quick recap. If you come with me to the book of Job, what I want to do is actually go through from chapter 4 to chapter 38 by 11 o'clock. And we can do this. And the slides will simply show you where we are and which speech we're on, so that you can see the pattern and what's happening as we go through. We began in chapter 4. This is Eliphaz's opening speech. And it's two chapters, chapters 4 and chapter 5. And basically what we get there is Eliphaz saying, "You've instructed many," verse 3, "you've strengthened people, you've lifted those that fell, you've strengthened the feeble knees, however, when it comes to you, you can't do it for yourself. Thou faintest, thou art troubled." That's my summary. Job replies in chapter 6 and chapter 7. And here we find that as a result of this conversation, or this statement by Eliphaz, these two speeches, Job says that my grief is heavy. It's so heavy, it's heavier than all the sand of the sea. Verse 4 of chapter 6, "For the arrows of the Almighty are within me, the poison whereof drinketh up my spirit." Job was getting more and more drained as time was going on. Job chapter 8 gives us Bildad's first speech, his opening speech. He always gives short speeches, and I tend to like Bildad for a reason, and you'll see that reason tomorrow, because he says one of the most profound things, I believe, in the whole of the book. But Job says, and if we pick out verse 4 of chapter 8, his theme is, well, actually, Job, maybe it's not you that's so wicked, but actually the children. Verse 4, if thy children have sinned against him, and he have cast them away for their transgression. And then he spoke those parables, didn't he? The parable of the Nile reed, the spider's web, and the vine. And said, you take away the web, and the spider falls out. Take away the mire, and the reed doesn't grow. Take away the sun, and the vine shrivels. Take away all the things God has given you, Job, and you will die, you will shrivel. Job's response is given from chapter 9 and chapter 10. And whereas Bildad has gone to the ancients and to their thinking and their knowledge, Job goes to the only source of knowledge, to the great oracle of all things, to eternal God. And Bildad and speaks of the things that God is in control of. And when we read through the opening verses of that chapter, we see that God is in control of the mountains and causes the earthquakes. God is in control of the sun and he can stop it shining and cause an eclipse. God is in control of all the oceans and controls the tides. And God is in control of the stars like Orion. And God is supreme, he's in control of all of that. And we go there, for example, says Job, in response to Bildad going to the reeds, to the vine and to the spider's web. Then we saw yesterday how that Zophar says, you're full of talk, it's words and words, we're playing around with words. You've said, my doctrine is pure and clean. And Job had never said that. Zophar makes false accusation against him. And so we find Job giving his third reply. And this is a long one, chapters 12, 13 and 14. So a long speech, a long reply from Job. But he says things like, chapter 12, verse 3, I have understanding as well as you. I'm not inferior to you. Yea, who knoweth not such things as these? I am as one mocked of his neighbour who calleth upon God, and he answereth him. There needs to be an umpire. There needs to be a mediator. There needs to be a man who understands what it's like to be a man, but actually mediates between man and God. It can't be God. It can't be an angel. It has to be a man, he says, someone, an umpire, a daysman, a mediator. And again, Job would go to the things of the heavens, to the beasts, to the fowls of the air, to the earth itself, to the fishes of the sea. And he says, God is in control of all of those things. And he's bringing it all to a purpose. And that ends the first cycle of speeches. The second cycle begins with Eliphaz in chapter 15. And in chapter 15 and verse 8, Eliphaz accuses him. Hast thou heard the secret of God? Yes, he had. And dost thou restrain wisdom to thyself? You keep it to yourself? You don't share that truth? And that wasn't true. Oh, but we're right, he says, because we're old men. And he goes on from verse 10, we're grey-headed, we're wise, we've got wrinkles, we've been around a long time, and we know. Age knows. And just in case the young think that we know the answers, we'll find later on that somebody else who is young makes the opposite mistake. And Eliphaz talks about the hypocrites, the play actors, those who put on masks to hide what they are and have a face on the outside that looks like they're happy or they're smiling because that's the part they're playing. And Eliphaz says, that's you, Job. On the outside, you appear to be one thing, but inside you're something else. You can't cope. When all goes wrong, you're different. You're the real Job then. And so Job's response, his fourth response now, is chapter 16 and 17. And verse 2 of chapter 16 shows the spirit of that section, really, where it talks about, I've heard many such things. Miserable comforters are you all. If there's a brother or a sister or both in our meeting who needs help and comfort, how upset would we be if they actually said, all you are is a miserable comforter? You see, you're not doing anything to help me, says Job. In fact, you're making it worse. miserable comforters. You're around me, you're here with me, but it's not working. It's not helping me. Then Bildad comes in. And Bildad starts talking about the wicked being driven from the light. And he was Job in darkness. The inferences are still there. And he talks about the wicked. And he says, verse 8, verse 9, verse 10, for the wicked they get caught in the net by the feet. Or the jinn shall catch him by the heel. Or the snare is laid for him in the ground. It will devour the strength of his skin. Even the firstborn of death shall devour his strength. The firstborn he'd lost. And so Bildad is driving home the darkness of Job's life is as a result now, as a result of the life he had before. The place of the wicked is darkness until eventually it is the grave itself. The place where Job wanted to go. Will you come with me to Job 19? Which is where I hoped to have ended yesterday. In Job chapter 19, there are some important pieces here I just want to pick up before we move on. Chapter 19, how long, says Job, will you vex my soul and break me in pieces with words? These 10 times have you reproached me. Ye are not ashamed that you make yourself strange to me. Be it indeed that I have heard, mine error remaineth with myself. I still don't know what it is that I've done wrong. 10 times. Now, whether that's the 10 speeches that we've had till now between Job and his friends, or whether it's 10 things that Bildad mentioned or 10 things specifically picked out from these things, I don't know. But 10 times he has been reproached and feels as though he's been afflicted. And for someone with all he'd been through, surely that was the last thing he needed. And yet not once in 18 chapters has anybody said to Job, this is it, and Job's seen that that's it. I cry out of wrong, verse 7, but I am not heard. I cry aloud, but there is no judgment. Verse 8, he has fenced up my way that I cannot pass. God has hedged him about, but this time in the way that Satan had required and asked. He has stripped me of my glory, verse 9, and taken the crown from my head. He has taken away the former glory of his kingship, and we'll see that in a moment, and taken the crown. He has destroyed me on every side, and I am gone. Mine hope has he removed like a tree. He has kindled his wrath against me, counts me as one of his enemies. That's how he felt. God had left him, he felt. His troops had come together. Sabians and the Chaldeans had come down. Maybe he hinted to them. His brethren, who were they? We've heard nothing about his brothers. If he was Jobab, the 13th son of Joktan, then he had 12 brothers. But however many brethren, it was more than one. And he hadn't seen them. And his acquaintance were estranged from him. His kinsfolk, his family have failed him. They're not there. His familiar friends have forgotten him. Those close, intimate friends have just forgotten him. Or maybe they just couldn't face him. They that dwell in mine house, the maids count him as a stranger. Well, maybe they blamed him for the loss of their loved ones back in the fields. I called my servant and he gave me no answer. I entreated with my mouth. Nobody wants to serve on him. Not even the most loyal servant is there. My breath is strange to my wife, though I entreated her for the children's sake of mine own body. They'd lost the children together. And yet she couldn't bring herself to come close to him. She couldn't understand. Despite his pleading. Even the young children, the little children who lived in the town where he was king, even they despised him. He stood up. And they spake against him. My inward friends, my really special close friends, abhorred me. It wasn't just they didn't have anything to do with him. They abhorred him. They hated him. They turned against him. My bone cleaveth to my skin and to my flesh. And I am escaped with the skin of my teeth. This man was very frail now. And you could see his bones through the flesh is the way that that language means. And notice the bone cleaving to the skin and flesh. Have pity, for the hand of God hath touched me. He knew that God had touched him. This wasn't the work of some other power. This was God had done this. And then he turns to the friends and says, why do you persecute me as God? Why are you making it harder and doing these things to me as well? In Job chapter 7, verses 4 to 16, Job chapter 19, verse 17 to 20, and Job chapter 30, verses 17 to 30, we see the state of Job as a whole. Sleepless nights, tossing and turning, endless days. His flesh is clothed with worms and maggots and clots of dust. His skin is broken and loathsome. His eyes will never see good or anything again. His eyesight is dimming. He is dying, it is terminal. He is anguished, he is in bitterness. He has scary dreams and terrifying nightmares. He would rather be strangled than live. His bones cleave to his skin. The stranger, the alienated, he's ignored, he's despised, he's spoken against, he's abhorred, and he's persecuted, not by his enemies, yet, but here by his familiar friends, his wife, the young children, those who he loved, and his intimate friend, God. Bones pierced him in the night seasons. The muscles and the sinews didn't rest, they were moving and painful. By great force of disease, his garment was changed. It binds him with his collar. It's almost, he's wearing this disease, this illness. He cried unto God, but there doesn't appear to be an apparent answer. And his skin is black, presumably where bits had died. And his bones are burned with heat. The bones feel as though they're burning, as with leprosy and other illnesses. And that made Job unclean in the sight of God. It put him under the law, if it had been there, without the camp. And what that meant to Job was that Job, being placed out of the camp, had no animals to offer. He had no fellowship or intimate relationship with God. There was no way back without him being healed of his illness. He was what would become known as without the camp. There would be the stench of death, as we know parts of him died. And there was the burning in the bones. And surely the only words he could say, and he does in several verses, is that he is unclean. The cry of the leper. And that's his cry in Job chapter 42. That's what God wants him to say. And in chapter 42, Job will admit that he is unclean. He will abhor himself. And the question, how could he ever be clean? How could he ever find a way back to God? He was like a leper. And leprosy is hereditary, it's contagious, it's increasing, it's incurable, but by God, it brings shame and disgrace, it deforms, it makes an individual unclean, and it separates them from God, in Scripture. That is, so we know, a type of sin. That sin is passed on from generation to generation, it's contagious, it gets worse, it increases, it's incurable, but by God, it brings shame and disgrace. And so with Job now, we go with Job, and start to go with Job, that he is like us, and we perhaps look to God the same way that Job appears to us through this week, with the sickness and with the disease. And through all of that, in Job 19, Job insists, verse 23, that his word should be written down, that people might understand this questioning, that we might learn too. And what fantastic faith he had. He had lost everything. And if we put it into modern day, he was on the poverty line and well below it. He'd lost all his animal stock. He was homeless. He had no way of income. He was redundant. He was on his own. Nobody wanted to know him, his wife, his friends. Where were the sons of God that met regularly? Where were they? Where were the angels? Where were the men? He was bereaved. He was depressed. And yet he could say, I know that my Redeemer lives. I know that he will stand at the latter day upon the earth. I know that though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I see God, whom I shall see for myself, and mine eyes shall behold, and not another. Though my reins be consumed within me, though this life might end, says Job, I know I will stand again. And after such great faith, chapter 20 records for us the response of Zophar in his second speech in Job 20. And verse 4, knowest thou not this of old, since man was placed upon the earth, that the triumphing of the wicked is short, and the joy of the hypocrite but for a moment. You're a hypocrite, Job, and you're wicked. Enjoy it while it lasts, this moment of glory. And so Job gives his sixth reply, which I guess is summarised again, Job 21, and this time verse 27. Behold, I know your thoughts, and the devices which ye wrongfully imagine against me. You are wrong, friends. You are wrong, brethren. The things you say against me, you imagine, they're not real, they're made up. Well, as the second cycle of speech is over. And if that isn't enough, now come the third cycle. Job 22, Eliphaz's his third and thankfully final speech. And look at verse 2. Can a man be profitable unto God, as he that is wise may be profitable unto himself? Verse 21, acquaint now thyself with him and be at peace, thereby good shall come unto thee. You wicked Job, go to God and repent of that wickedness, of that sin. Let's start to think then as to why these three friends were so adamant about divine retribution, and why they are so adamant with this thing that Job has to be wicked because he's suffering, and trying to insist that Job is not perfect, upright, one that fears God and eschews evil. Because almost every accusation links into those four statements. They must have had a reason. And if they were truly his friends and they were trying to comfort and to mourn with him, they must genuinely have believed that playing around with the words and insisting that this was right, they must have believed in it. Job 23 is Job's response in chapter 24. It's not getting any better. Look at verse 2 of chapter 23. Even today is my complaint bitter. My stroke is heavier than my groaning. Oh, that I knew when I might find him, that I might come even to his seat. If only, he says, I could find God. But you see, he can't. He can't go into the presence of God. He's unclean. He can't go to the tent or the tabernacle where the sons of God would meet. They wouldn't allow him in. He's got to wait for God to come to him. And he can't cope. He wants God to come because he knows that God is a fair and upright judge. And so Bildad comes on the scene, and Bildad asks this question, and this is the crucial question for me. Chapter 25, dominion and fear are with him, verse 2, he maketh peace in his high places. Verse 4, how then can man be justified with God? Or how can he be clean that is born of a woman? How is it possible for anyone born of a woman to be clean? And that to me is the crucial message of the whole of the book of Job. And I'm going to do a Stuart on you and say, I'm not going to deal with that passage till tomorrow. But when we do it tomorrow, we will be moved when we realise that the answer in the book of Job is that Jesus Christ would come and he would be crucified. And within the book of Job, the picture of Christ being crucified and hanging on the tree is portrayed for us in the words of a friend, not in the words of Job. And he will show the way in which a man can be made clean. But we see that tomorrow. So Job 26 and 27 is Job's eighth reply now. Verse 2, how hast thou, of chapter 26, how hast thou helped him that is without power? How savest thou the arm of that strength? To whom hast thou uttered words? Verse 4, whose spirit came from thee? Dead things are formed under the waters and the inhabitants thereof. You see, even in death, sometimes life can come forth. Well, Zophar, and I believe it was Zophar who gave his third address, chapter 28, even though he doesn't say Zophar spoke, it doesn't really matter who said these words. It's the searching out of wisdom and the accusation that Job doesn't have. Eliphaz had said earlier, I'm sorry, I missed this point, that Job's punishment wasn't as bad as it should be. It was worse than he actually was, if that makes sense. That he actually felt that Job didn't have enough suffering. And that brings us to a fantastic section of the book of Job, chapters 29, 30 and 31. And chapter 29 opens with Job saying, oh, that I were as in months past. So it's been a few months now, this suffering, as in the days when God preserved me, watched over me, when his lamp shined in my head, and when by his light I walked through darkness. As the word of life leads us through life, Job was led by God. As it was in the days of my youth, when the secret of God was upon my tabernacle. Oh, for that time when God used to come into my tent and talk with me, when the Almighty was yet with me, when my children were about me, when those seven sons and three daughters, whom he loved so much in chapter 1, we're told, were with me. When I washed my steps with butter and the rock poured out rivers of oil. When I went out to the gates through the city, when I prepared my seat in the street. This was Job then as the king. This was Job as the ruler, who went out through the city. And he went to the gate of the city. There was a seat prepared for him in the street. The young men saw him and hid themselves. The aged rose up and stood up. The princes refrained talking and laid their hand on their mouth. He had power and authority that the princes didn't speak. Why? The nobles held their peace. All the important people, their tongue cleaved to the roof of their mouth. When the ear heard me, then it blessed me. And when the eye saw me, it gave witness to me. Because. And this isn't Job saying, this is all the things I've done, look how good I am. This is Job saying, this is what I want to go back to. Because this is when I was at my happiest. This was when it was really good. When, verse 12, I delivered the poor that cried, and the fatherless, and him that had none to help. The orphans, he used to go and he used to be with them. And he delivered the poor who couldn't afford things. He gave them money or food, whatever it was. The blessing of him that was ready to perish came upon me, and I caused the widow's heart to sing for joy. The woman who cried because she'd lost her loved one, he helped her in her heart to sing and rejoice. I put on righteousness and it clothed me. It fitted me. My judgment was a robe and a diadem. I was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame. I was father to the poor, and the cause which I knew not I searched out. You see, if he didn't know what was wrong, he found out. He actually says in one of his speeches, he wouldn't have dealt with himself as the friends did. He would have found out what the problem was and worked with the person. He broke the jaws of the wicked and plucked the spoil out with his teeth. He got rid of evil. Out of his kingdom he banished the wicked. I shall die in my nest, I shall multiply my days as the sand. My root was spread out by the waters, and the dew lay all night upon my branch. My glory was fresh in me, and my bow was renewed into my hand. Unto me men gave ear and waited, and kept silence at my counsel. That was the counsel of God, wasn't it? Who tabernacled with him. And after my words they spake not again, and my speech dropped upon them. One word from him. They listened, and they fed upon it. They waited for me as the rain, and they opened their mouth wide as for the latter rain. You know, this chapter is so full of Christ, isn't it? Of the things that Christ did, and Job, to a measure, tries to do them. And here we see him as the former and the latter rain, even. If I laughed on them, they believed it not, and the light of my countenance they cast not down. I chose out their way and sat chief, and dwelt as a king in the army, and one that comforteth the mourners. That was the life I had of sharing the righteousness that God had given him, and reflecting the character that God required of him, and sharing what we would call the truth, setting the example for others to follow. But, chapter 30, but now they that are younger than I have me in derision, whose fathers I would have disdained to have set with the dogs of my flock. Yea, whereto might the strength of their hands profit me, in whom old age was perished? For want and famine they are solitary, fleeing into the wilderness of desolation. You see, he got rid of the wicked. He banished them into the caves. We'll see. But now the children of those wicked are now there. You see, we get the picture sometimes that Job sat with his friends and everybody else was gone. If that's what we think, and that's certainly what I thought, we suddenly get a shock when we start to read what happened in chapter 30. Because the young men now are there, and they're deriding Job. They're mocking him. Verse 5, they were driven forth from among men to dwell in the cliffs of the valleys. Verse 6, in caves of the earth and rocks. I drove them out of the land, he says. Among the bushes they brayed, under the nettles. They were the children of fools, children of base men. And now, verse 9, they were viler than earth. Verse 9, and now am I their song, I am their byword. He also becomes a type of the nation of Israel in this passage. The nation of Israel, who ultimately would become a byword. But look what they do. They're singing songs about him. They're singing around Job and they're mocking him. They're taunting him with song, ridicule. Verse 10, they abhor him. They flee from me and spare not to spit in my face. They spit in his face. Just as they would the master. Because he hath loosed my cord and afflicted me, they have also let loose the bridle before me. They see that God is now bringing this on Job, therefore they can join in because they're right and Job was wrong. They mar my path, verse 13. Terrors are upon me, verse 15. My soul is poured out upon me, verse 16. My bones, verse 17, my bones are pierced in me in the night season. His bones are pierced. His sinews take no rest. Verse 20, I cry unto thee, and thou dost not hear me. Verse 23, for I know that thou wilt bring me to death, to the house appointed for all living. Verse 25, you see, did not I weep for him that was in trouble? You see, before, says Job, I used to weep for those in trouble. I shared their grief, my soul, verse 25, grieved for the poor. When I looked for good, then evil came. My bowels boiled and rested not. The days of affliction prevented me. I went mourning without the sun. My harp, verse 31, is turned to mourning, and my organ to the voice of them that weep. He played the organ, whatever that was, and he played the harp, and now it's the mourning. And then we come to chapter 31. And I think that as we read chapter 31, Job suddenly realises what it's all about. And at the end of this chapter, he suddenly says, I think, that he understands what's happened. I made a covenant with mine eyes. Why then should I think upon a maid? For what portion of God is there from above, and what inheritance of the Almighty from on high? Is not destruction to the wicked, and strange punishment to the work of his iniquity? That's how he understands things to be, that the wicked are punished, but the righteous will flourish. He sees that, and that's his belief. So he throws out the challenge to the friends and to God. If I have walked with vanity, or if my foot hath hasted to deceit, let me be weighed in an even balance, that God may know my integrity. I assume that since none of the friends were proved right, and since God does not correct anything that is done, that these things were not true of Job. And therefore, as we go through by inference, then if he didn't do them, then he did do them. So if he says, have I walked with vanity, then he didn't. If he said, did I walk with deceit, then he didn't. If, verse 7, my step has turned out the way, and my heart walked after mine eyes, if any blot hath cleaved my hands, then let me sow and let another eat. Yet let my offspring be rooted out. Tell you what I'll do, says God, Job. If I have ever done these things, if I've done those things, then all the crops that I've produced, give them to somebody else. And all my offspring that I've got, then give those to someone else. If mine heart has been deceived by a woman, or if I've laid wait at my neighbour's door, then let my wife grind to another, and let others bow down unto her. If I've looked at another woman and lusted after her in my heart, then take my wife away from me. It is an iniquity to be punished by the judges. Verse 13, if I despise the cause of my manservant or my maidservant, when they contended with me, when they disagreed with me, what then shall I do when God riseth up, and when he visiteth, what shall I answer him? If I did anything against my servants, take them away from me. Did not he that made me in the womb make him, and did not one fashion him in the womb? If I have withheld the poor from their desire, or caused the eyes of the widow to fail, or have eaten my morsel alone, I have not shared my bread. And if the fatherless haven't been fed, if I've seen any perish because for want of clothing, verse 9, if his loins have not blessed me, and if he were not warmed with the fleece of my sheep, if I've lifted up my hand against the fatherless when I saw him needing help at the gate, then let mine arm fall from my shoulder blade, and mine arm be broken from my bone, and do something to my body. Break the arms that helped or didn't help. And as we read this passage, I can't help thinking of Jesus saying about us feeding the hungry and the naked, the thirsty, and those that are in prison. verse 24. If I have made gold my hope, or have said to fine gold, thou art my confidence. If I had rejoiced because my wealth was great and because my hand had gotten much. If I've done it because I've got all this money and all these riches and all this household. If I saw the sun when it shined and the moon walking in the brightness, and my heart was secretly enticed, or my mouth has kissed my hand, I've paid homage to myself and put myself on a pedestal, this also were an iniquity to be punished by the judge, for I should have denied the God that is above. If that happened to me, then I should be punished for it too. Take it away, the gold, silver, the riches, the household. If I rejoiced at the destruction of him that hated me, or lifted up my voice when evil found me, if I was happy to get rid of those people that I kicked out of the kingdom, neither have I suffered my mouth to sin by wishing a curse to his soul. I didn't even wish them dead. I didn't even wish bad on them. I just put them out of the kingdom. If the men of my tabernacle said not, oh, that we had his flesh, we cannot be satisfied. The stranger didn't lodge in the street, but I opened my doors to the traveller. I didn't let people who needed come in and share the things that I've got. If I covered my transgressions as Adam by holding my iniquity in my bosom, if I've hidden it and said I didn't sin, ignore it, I haven't done anything wrong. Did I fear a great multitude, or did the contempt of families terrify me, that I kept silence and went not out of the door? And I think, brothers and sisters, and I won't know this side of the kingdom, but I think that Job at this moment in time has suddenly realised what it was all about. Because someone, the Satan, Hashatan, had believed those things were true of Job. And Job realised that all the things that he just said, let those things happen to me, if those things are true, had happened to him because someone somewhere believed it was true. And that's why I think in verse 35, Job says, oh, that one would hear me. If someone could hear me. My desire is this, that the Almighty would answer me, and that mine adversary had written a book. If only, says Job, my adversary would write it down in a book, would put on account what it is, the charge against me. And then I would take that book to God and ask God to judge, because in his heart Job believed he was true. And I think it has suddenly dawned on Job that all this was happening to him because someone, maybe even God, had thought he had done those things. And perhaps that's why Job ends his words. He has nothing more to say. He can't go to God. But he wants the book written. The word adversary there means a human adversary, a man, an individual who has acted as an adversary to him. And he wants him to write a book. And that's why I think, and I'm not dogmatic, but I think that Satan wrote the book of Job. Because after all, he was the one who knew all about chapters 1 and 2. And he would have watched chapters 3 to 38 unfold. And he would have witnessed chapters 40 to 42. And maybe he repented. And having repented, his sin is covered forever. But there is someone else to come in. I can't do justice to Elihu in the space of 5-ish minutes. But I just want to pick up a few points. Chapter 32, verses 1 to 5, are the introduction we have to Elihu. The three men ceased to answer Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. Now there is argument and discussion on this. Was Job righteous in his own eyes? Is that a divine comment? Or, as it seems most commentators looking at the original language suggest, rather than theologians, it was a comment on their motive. They stopped talking to him because, as far as they were concerned, he was righteous in his own eyes. Second point, we are told that Elihu was wrathful, he had been kindled against him, because he justified himself rather than God. And I ask the question, did he? Because I don't think he did. Elihu waits until Job had spoken, because they were elder than he, and when Elihu saw there was no answer in the mouth of these three men, then his wrath was kindled. So was Elihu inspired? Was Elihu writing what he said or not? And I think the test has to be looking at what he said. One point I need to pick up on is that there are some brethren who, and commentators looking at the book of Job, believe that verses 10 to 18 prove that Elihu wrote the book. And that may be the case, that Elihu may have written the book and he may have been the Satan. The reason why I don't agree with that personally is, if you go into read verse 10, "Hearken unto me, I will show mine opinion. I waited for your words. I gave ear to your reasons while you searched out what to say." So he sat there all the way through this, as well as the other people that were there. He sat there, he watched. He's young, he now comes in. He hasn't spoken, verse 6, because he was young and they were elder than him. He's amazed that none of them have said anything to him. Verse 16, "When I had waited, for they spake not, but stood still and answered no more, I said, I will answer also my part. I also will show mine opinion." And because of that expression, "for they spake not, but stood still and answered no more, I said," looks as though it's third person, and rather like in Acts where suddenly we go to we and we realise that Luke's involved. The assumption is that Elihu's involved. It is only the authorised version that states that. Most, and it's a vast majority, it's like 99% of translators and commentators interpret that as saying, that's saying now, I've sat and waited. And the italics, the I said, isn't there. And it's, I've sat here, I've waited, I've answered. And if you read the style of this chapter, Elihu is loads of words and he says things over and over in the Hebrew poetic form. But was he inspired? Well, the check and the proof, we said earlier, for a prophet is, if they speak true and it come to pass. So let me throw my own questions out. In chapter 33 and at verse 9, Elihu says to Job, "You said, I am clean without transgression, I am innocent, neither is there iniquity in me." And my challenge is to say, where did Job say that? Because nowhere in the book of Job can I find that expression. In fact, those words are not used by him. It's Zophar in chapter 11 who accuses Job of being of that, but he doesn't say it. While we're in chapter 33, verse 15, Elijah says there's two ways God talks to people. One is through dreams and one is through suffering, both of which Job were going through. And so Elijah is saying God's talking to you, which was true. But going to chapter 34, verse 5, he says, "For Job hath said, I am righteous and God hath taken away my judgment. Shall I lie against my right? My wound is incurable without transgression." And I'm sorry, but Job never said, "I am righteous." He never said, "God hath taken away my judgment." He never said his wound was incurable without, and he never said he was without transgression. Verse 9, "It profiteth man nothing that he should delight himself with God." And Job didn't say that. Just to correct myself, I will come back. "My wound is incurable without transgression" is what he hasn't said, all of that. He did believe he was dying. It's the without transgression bit. So there are four statements that Elihu makes that I can't find Job saying. Doesn't mean he wasn't right. Doesn't mean Job hadn't said it somewhere else. I'm just saying it's not recorded in the book of Job. So for me, Elihu had been an observer. There is value in some of the things Elihu says. It's not all bad. There are good things in there. There are things true. And Elihu really does prepare Job, because while Elihu is speaking, the earth starts to tremble. And we read in that chapter 37, of the earth trembling as God is now coming nearer and nearer. So I don't think Elihu was the author, but I wouldn't have a problem if somebody thought that. He's talked about the ways in which God talks to men. But here's the big thing now. Because we're about to leave Job again, till tomorrow. And we're about to leave Job sitting on the ground, scratching, painful, getting worse, depressed, down, realising that actually all these things happened to him because someone or everyone thought that he was something he wasn't. And the earth is shaking. And Elihu says, "See the clouds gathering. Hear the thunder coming. That's the whirlwind of Almighty God, El Shaddai, coming towards you. And that's what you've asked for. You've asked for God to come to you, and the whirlwind comes. He asked for God, and God comes. Will he live, or will he die? Because the last time the whirlwind came, it killed his children. And now the whirlwind comes for Job.